Beyond, beyond, on Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are on this spinning blue-green globe plummeting through space. Into stuff. And that's where the problem is. Anyway, so tonight I didn't have a guest booked or anything. It was just open, and I've been a bit busy the last week and not very well, and hadn't really had time to plan anything or set anything up. So there was a space. You know, sometimes if there's a space, I'll ask for call-ins or something like that. But people have been sending me messages for the last few days on various subjects. You know, a lot of them like, please ask Alex this, and please ask Simon this. And it's like, that's a bit much. It's a bit much to ask me to ask these questions, because, like, you know, I have my own questions for a start. And, we have a space. It's called a show. And you know, you got the chance to ask a question, and really it's the luck of the draw, or well, it's getting in first, really. That's I answer the first question that is don't ask questions about other people, right? Don't ask people to talk about other people. You know, don't ask somebody to diss Alex Jones or something like that. That's stupid, right? So those questions will be rejected. Ask questions that have, the better depth of question, the better. And of course, you know, if you get in first, that always helps. Because basically, I go up the list, and if there's anything that is, oh yeah, that's right, no flat earth questions, right? It's stupid. All right, so that's my filter method. So when Simon Parks and Alex Collier come on my shows, or I'm hosting the shows, that's how I ask the questions. So ask a sensible question about real stuff or philosophy or the, you know, enlightenment, and, you know, really good stuff. That's what we all want to hear. That's what everybody wants to hear. So having said that, I got a question in Facebook today from a friend, and I thought, well, that would be quite an interesting thing to talk about. Just me, because, you know, I talk to lots of people, but I don't have a chance to talk much about it, and people haven't really asked me about it. And so today I have, now, is it, maybe you should, it's Beth and Kurt, right? There, and how do you pronounce your surname?
Tyrell.
Tyrell. All right, so Kurt Tyrell and Beth Tyrell, thank you and welcome to Ever Beyond. How are you?
Great, and awesome to be here with you.
Hi, it's lovely to have you on. And so, you know, this morning, you know, you're probably idly, there's JP on Facebook. Let's ask him a question. And you said, let's have a call about it. Let's, you know, talk about stuff. So I thought, well, having, you know, explained my show situation, and that is, I thought I'd combine the two things, bring the two timelines together, make a show out of people asking me questions about stuff. We don't normally get that, so I'm honoured that you've asked me these questions, or that you've you've thought about it at least. So, do you want to talk? You know, talk a little bit about yourself and say, you know, where are you from and what's happening for you and stuff. Why you're interested in this?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very interested in a lot of subject matter related to the occult. You know, the New Age community, ghosts, things like that. It's always been with me my whole life. And so I live on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And like I was saying, I've just my entire life had a strong curiosity about these kinds of subjects. And maybe it's past life, I'm not sure, but I definitely strongly identify with the Germans during World War II. I suspect I was even maybe a soldier. I was in combat or something like that. So stuff has come up in relation to that. But I had questions about, and through your information, JP, just intriguing questions about, finding out that the development of flying saucers from the Germans during World War II is really fascinating to me. So, and earlier you gave me a link, to read a book, or I guess you've read the book for me, so I'll listen to it. But I just had a question about where the Fourth Reich is now. Was it, as I understand it, I believe it was kind of took over the U.S. government, and they've all kind of been absorbed into a international space fleet. Is that right?
Okay, so yes, the Fourth Reich.
Yeah.
You're seeing the Fourth Reich. It's what's called the New World Order.
Yeah, okay.
It's the corporate world. And I don't know if you think about it, you can sense it by its vibration, which is very cold, and on the outside it's very kind of bright and shiny. And that is the it's what we call the Luciferian energy. You know, Lucifer is very attractive. He's very blonde and blue-eyed and, you know, very pretty, you know. That's the basic, it's very nice on the outside, very attractive on the outside, and really dark and evil on the inside, you know. So how it gets there. So, for instance, you have your very beautiful Apple iPhones and computers and all very beautiful and modern and lovely styling and design, but there are people who are working in factories where they have nets around the outside of the building, because people will throw themselves off because they're so depressed working for these companies, you know. And that's the dichotomy that we face when you're living in the Nazi world, you know. And people who are awake and aware are feeling the pain of all of this. You know, I really don't like touching Apple products for that reason. You know, I think that they're particularly oppressive, that company. And I go for Android. You know, it's an open source thing. And these are the kind of choices that you can make just to kind of keep yourself out of the clutch of the corporate Nazi ideology, which is very attractive. This is the thing. Nazism is an incredibly attractive thing for the lazy-minded. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, definitely. Now, that's funny you mentioned that, because a friend gave me his Android device before he moved about a month ago. And I have a bit of a guilt about it, but I work night shifts, so it's great to have just to go to YouTube and, you know, kind of go online and do research and read stuff. But yeah, there's a dichotomy there. You know, you feel like Big Brother has really got a finger on you. That's for sure.
Certainly, but you know, I'd rather have an Android than an Apple, because the Apples, you know, they're blatant about it. The Apple, look, brothers and sisters, if you're listening on an iPhone, right, you've got this speech facility on it, and you just kind of, you know, talk to your phone, and you say okay Google or whatever, and this thing then does, you know, whatever it is. What you got to understand is that the telephone itself is not doing the voice recognitions. There's the software that does the voice recognition is on the web, and so it's everything that you're saying is going on the web to be recognized, whether it's a command or not. And so you might be having a conversation with a couple of friends about going out to dinner, and you might say, oh yeah, I fancy a bit of chicken, and then you might start seeing adverts for chicken on your Facebook feed. Do you see what I'm saying? This stuff is real, and it's really happening right now. And so, you know, the idea of Big Brother is everywhere. Yeah, it's in your pocket. So, hey, this is real doom and gloom. No, no, what you got to do is, you know, you don't need voice recognition. It's just flash. It takes ages. Doesn't work straight away, you know, does it? What's wrong with pressing buttons? I don't know. But that's number one thing about, you know, the smartphone is that they're you know, it's not like to say that they're bugs. They are bugs. They are literally reporting everything you're saying and perhaps even transcribing it at the same time. I wonder, is there some software that's transcribing this conversation as we speak, banana fish pilchard? Yes, that'll screw it up. Throw random words, random completely unconnected words into your speech, you know. Penguin, you know. Stuff like that. So yeah, so you've got your you've got your Android. Now the thing about the Android is that it's got an open source operating system, which means that if you think, well, I think they might be spying on me, you can actually go and check it out, and you can look at the code if you know how to read code. But, you know, those who can read code can look at the code and see that, you know, see exactly what the thing's doing. It's not being underhand. Whereas Apple is proprietary, and you can't actually look inside the code. You don't know what it's doing. I never know what Apples are doing. They're like inscrutable things. How do you get it to how do you change the screen resolution? How do you do this? How do you anyway? I will stop moaning about them. But that's the issue with certain smartphones is that they have the voice software. Now the next software that you have to worry about is the tracking software. Now people are kind of used to it now. But if you've got a GPS, and that goes for both Androids and Apples, is that if you're using GPS, it means that somebody somewhere or someone somewhere can find where you are because you're bleeping out. It's essentially like a transponder, like you have on an airplane, that tells the planet or tells Big Brother who you are and where you're going. Again, you can turn these things off if you don't want people to know that. You know, if you're going along to your dealer or something like that. But essentially, if you don't want to be tracked, well, the mobile phone is a transponder, so it will identify you. By the way, if they've got a drone and it's tracking you, guess what it's looking for? Guess how it finds you? Yes, it's your mobile phone. So If you find yourself being targeted by a drone, take your phone out of your pocket and chuck it away, and see what happens. It's worth it. Otherwise, you could be blown up. There was a show that had that. Was that Heroes? I think, either in Heroes or that other one, the one with the aliens, The Event. I think they had some guy avoiding a drone by chucking the phone out of his pocket. Hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes, mobile phones. I have to say that, you know, I've got mine. I use it all the time. But it's an old one, and I use it for camera. It's got a brilliant camera in it. Takes some fantastic photos. So, meanwhile, Kurt. Where were we?
Well, we were just... I just had a thought as well, JP, just because we're talking about being monitored. It's interesting as well on Facebook. You know, a lot of people will post things on there and educate each other. You know, those of us that are awake. And the first Charlie Hebdo attack that went down, I actually got kicked off of Facebook because I had an intuition about, you know, the imagery where a police officer is supposedly assassinated on the ground. He's shot in the head. And one of these jihadist guys has a AK-47. And the image was blurred over, and I just had an intuition about it. I was working a night shift. I went home in the morning. I go on YouTube. Somebody else had put this thing up unblurred, and this guy is not shot in the head. So I put it onto YouTube. Sorry, Facebook, from YouTube. And the next time I tried to go online, I was kicked off of Facebook. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they're very sensitive about that. So here's the thing, is, you know, we're talking about the Fourth Reich. And here's some of the things that you might have missed. Hang on, my phone's just going to... doing something. Okay. A couple of years ago, there was the thing they called the Ice Bucket Challenge. Do you remember this thing?
Where, that's all over the place.
Yeah. Horrible. That's pure Nazi. You know, it's pure humiliation, shock, mind control. It wasn't a good thing to do. It's not a good thing to do to your human body. It is a very shocking and traumatic. So it's kind of like a mind control situation. We've done quite a few shows. You may not be so familiar, but in past years I've had various shows, and one is with a wonderful lady called Katie Galanti, and we've been discussing the rollout of this thing. You know, it's really like we have to see the Fourth Reich, we have to see the Nazis come out before we can move on. And that is what is called disclosure. That's really what it's about. It's about seeing the evil influence on us, and seeing it come out into the open and say, "Hi, yes, it's been us all along," kind of thing. And you know, it's the Fourth Reich. It's been around before. The Roman Empire, I think, was the second, and the Babylonian Empire was the first. It all comes, as far as I can see, from Aldebaran, and it's an extension of the Aldebaran Empire. And yes, Aldebaran. That's very interesting. There was a Queen Sharia. Isn't that interesting? So you may also think, hang on, Sharia, that sounds like Muslim. What if you combined the harshness of Islam and the harshness of Christianity and the harshness of Judaism all into one world religion? You could call it Scientology if you like, or something like it. Or Mormonism, you know, these are newish religions, and we know the religion is just for mind control. It's to control the people, you know, we really have to bust through these old dogmas, you know. We have a loving God and who somehow forsakes us, and you know, because we're bad, yeah. That's how little children think when their parents are abusive. You know, I must be a bad person. You know, we've got like a collective Stockholm syndrome of accepting harshness and abuse and cruelty from all people in the world, and expecting that because that's just the way it is. No, I don't accept that. That's not the way humans should live. So, this is one of the reasons that I study these things. You know, it's like the art of war. You have to know your enemy. And if we don't even know that we have an enemy, then you've already lost. So I believe that we're in the middle of a war. There are several layers of the war. One of them is in outer space. One of them is in the Middle East. One of them is all over the world. And another one is in our hearts. And, you know, like I was saying, you know, the Nazi ideology is very attractive on one level. You know, because they're all fit, all blonde and beautiful, you know, everything's perfect. That's the whole thing. Everything's perfect and uniform. In fact, it's the ideal kind of seventh-ray situation on the dark side, because it doesn't allow for individual creativity, or any creativity at all, apart from the Führer, you know, from the leader. Everything else must be done as it's told. So it's not the best, it's not a great human ideology. It's only for control of masses. And it's a kind of hive mind without the mind, without, you know, without the telepathic communication of the hive mind. So yeah, that's the corporate world. And, you know, now you see it, you can, you know, or rather, you know, now I've shone the light on it, you can see it for what it is, and you can see exactly for what it is. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, very interesting. I'm always watching anything on major media, trying to find that angle, more or less. International stuff, anything that smells like a false flag. Do you have any thoughts on the recent Paris terrorist attack, JP? Because I've, again, trying to sort through, you know, the material when you start doing some research. Some people are saying that there were no fatalities, that they were all actors. Some are saying that there were fatalities. Do you have any insight into that?
All right. Now, it gets delicate, you see. This is one of the reasons that they do this. Is because it's kind of what they call a berserker, you know, situation, where mercenaries are told to go berserk. You know, just do what you do, but do it in town. But there's many layers, all right. So layer number one, there was a military drill. Layer number two, there's probably insurance sums that are involved, you know, insurance policies. Catastrophe bonds, they're called. And there's large amounts of money that is involved with these things. You know, we heard a little bit about that with Larry Silverstein. But basically all of these things have an insurance... It's basically an insurance job. What we call in Britain an insurance job. Where, you know... you allow your car to be set on fire so you can claim the insurance for it. This kind of insurance jobs, you know, when you insure buildings, it's like billions of dollars. And it's quite lucrative if you do that, because there may be, for instance, like in the Twin Towers, there may be like enough asbestos, for instance, to make it completely uneconomic to remove it. So... they just powder it and send it all over New York. That's what they did with the asbestos in the World Trade Center. This is why everybody's getting cancer and dying in New York. That, as well as the uranium that they used in the bombs. Anyway, long story. So, layer number three is arms... arms dealers issue, you know. They're selling. God, you know, there's product placement in these things. You know, oh yes, the AK-47. Well, people might think, oh, AK-47, well, that's military hardware. Somebody sells them, and you know, just the mere mention of the name, for good or ill, will create some sales somewhere. There was a Samsung phone that was featured in one of these things, and I thought, there's some product placement. If you look at this thing, instead of this being on the news, as being a drama, right, a TV drama, and then you take that attitude, you're getting much more close to the reality of what's really going on. And we see crying girl, you know, this dark-haired girl who's always got the wrinkled brow, and it's the same wrinkled brow because people have the same brow, you know. It's a very kind of blatant situation that is going on, you know, with this. And yet, at the same time, you know, I know people who are involved in the music business, and what could eventually become my son-in-law had a friend who was apparently one of the merchandise people in the concert. You know, they sell the T-shirts, and he was supposed to have been killed in this. Supposed to. Haven't heard much back from it, but. I think, and then there's the next level of this, and the next level of this is the satanic ritual, and the extraction of the juices of the louche, they call it, of the fear and distress that is produced by such a situation. Have you seen Monsters, Inc.?
I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, in Monsters, Inc., the monster comes out of the cupboard, and the child screams and screams and screams, and this little indicator dial goes, bing, you know. When it gets to the top, the monster goes in the cupboard, and they've collected their residue, you know. That is called louche. And it is, how can I say this, extracted from large groups of humans who are in distress. And it literally is an energy source. It's used by fourth dimensional vampiric creatures to exist on. I mean, the Monsters, Inc. is more or less real, you know, on a level. It's not as pretty and furry. In fact, if you look at all these movies that have a bit of disclosure in it, the ones that are the funniest are usually about the most serious situations. Like the men who stare at goats, you know, the men who stare at, oh yeah, it's very funny, men stare at goats, but actually they've got remote influencers who can kill people with a distance. We've seen that Nancy Hopkins has noticed that, or was told by her NSA boss that the some people were able to be psychically induced into a spontaneous combustion by remote influence. So it's stuff. It's stuff. So yeah, so there's the satanic ritual element of this, and it's happening at the same time as CERN, which is another satanic ritual going on. They're trying to open a portal, right? Satanic ritual uses this energy to open a portal, and they're trying to chuck as much as they can in, so they're trying to freak everybody out in order to feed this negative vortex, which is trying, and they're trying to bring through more and more oppression, little niggles, biting insects, you know, whatever it is that is more annoying. So that's another level. How many levels have we got so far? Have I missed anything?
Well, it sounds like you've got it covered, that's for sure. You know, I don't know if you happened to read Simon Park's newsletter today, JP.
I did, yes.
Yeah, so he was saying that CERN is down, apparently. It's not working anymore.
Well, here's the thing. Now, that's according to two of my guests. Simon Park is saying that the CERN is not working at all. And my guest last Monday, Daniel McBoylan, who was describing the situation that the collimator. Now, do you know about the accelerator?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Right. Well, in order to make the beam turn a corner, because beams travel in straight lines, don't they? In order to make it turn a corner, they have to use incredibly strong magnets, super-cooled electromagnets, that will curve the beam around in the circle. And the devices that do this are called collimators. And as I said, they're super-cooled. That means there's like an air conditioning that takes them down to minus 273 degrees Celsius, or 1 degree Kelvin. Which then allows the magnets to become incredibly strong because they're being supercooled, and that is enough magnetic force that can take these beams and turn them move them sideways, literally. And so that's called a collimator, and one of the collimators had failed somehow. Simon was saying, that it was a source intervention. And the beam, instead of going round the bend, it went straight on, and it went right through a water main, which came up through some hospital stairwell or something, like 200-foot geyser. I mean, there was a photo of it, and this great big geyser was kind of piling its way out. I don't know. We see that, and then there's this other guy saying nothing's happening, it's just everything's working normally. And then there's the other thing about the... have you read this this supposed account from a CERN scientist about what had happened?
Yeah, I think that's what I was reading in relation to that. Yeah, that was today, wasn't it?
Right. No, this is something that happened like some months ago.
Yeah.
It was on an ATS thing, the Above Top Secret Forum. You hear about that?
I haven't, no.
All right, yeah. Well, that's another really interesting thing. There's like a story about the people who are in charge, the sort of very top scientists of it, knew what it was doing, and would have these secret meetings in the middle of the night and run the thing up, and it would... there would be a dimensional shift going on, and they were moving dimensions, and they were popping in and out, and they would find themselves in another dimensional version of themselves, or they would find other dimensional versions of their colleagues. It got very, very strange. So I don't know if you've heard about that one. So CERN, they're pissing on the mains, just like not doing a good job. There's Craig saying, didn't Simon say that all the negative energy in the Paris attacks nearly cut off humans' collection from to source? The idea. Okay, so let's take it back. Okay, where's my way back machine? Let's just take the time machine. Oh yes, meanwhile, back in 1938, because this is where it's, it is a part of, it started even longer before that, it started in the 1700s. In the 1930s, we had the discovery of an extraterrestrial craft in the German woodlands, Black Forest, I think, and the connection with Aldebaran from the Vril Society. This is kind of where we were going to be talking about, wasn't it, Brad, Kurt?
Yes, good. Yeah.
So here in this period of time is where the book that I read is set, right? It's called Die Glocke, which means the bell. We get the word clock from Glocke, and it's basically a bell, because clocks used to be just, one bell, two bells. The story is that there are Vrildarmen, the Vril Society was a kind of idealistic, they were looking for free energy. We have like Keshe Foundation and all this stuff nowadays. the Royal Society were kind of like that. They were into, you know, very idealistic, vegetarians, and, you know, very into being fit and having a, you know, having a free source of energy, because they were, you know, having trouble with the Rothschilds. This is, you know, partly why Hitler came to power, because they knew he was, he was non-sympathetic to the Rothschilds, and that's one of the reasons he got a lot of support. And so he was trying to find free energy to free himself from the Rockefeller influence, because they had the control of over all of the oil, you know, and everything ran on oil, particularly tanks and weapons and everything. So they were looking for non-oil sources of fuel and of energy. And the Vril Society were making, you know, they were basically channeling these entities from other planets and other star systems, and one of them came through, and it was Alcuin, I think was his name. Can't remember. Alcuin. I get confused with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So, there was the Vril Society, and there was Maria Orsich, I'm reading about her at the moment. Their connection with Aldebaran. Now, what's interesting is that Aldebaran was the place that they said they founded Summa, and that Summa was a... basically they brought the civilization. You know, we always wonder, you know, how come, you know, suddenly, 7,000 years ago, bam, there's a civilization, these amazing buildings and architecture and culture and all this, bam, yeah, it just arrived. Just like a colony, just like America, you know. So that's the way it is, it's a colony. And, the trouble with the Aldebarans is that they're, imperialist. And so everywhere has to be part of their empire or dead. And if you think about the Nazi MO, that's just, you know, nothing's changed. You know, you're either in us or you're dead. You know, you're either obedient to us or we kill you. Or... we extract your information from you and then we kill you, which is what they do to just about everybody. Layer upon layer, indeed. So the Aldebarans came to Sumer, founded Sumeria. They call themselves the Sumi, which they wrote in runes, what we call runes these days, and spoke in a German. It's strange, you know, to think that the Sumerians actually spoke German. But anyway, it's a long time ago. This imperialist society has moved through time and become... it became the Babylonian Empire. It became the Roman Empire. It became... the British Empire, and is now the global international Nazi, the UN, the universal Nazi, except it's not called Nazi, it's everything else but the name Nazi. So if we open our eyes, we can see that it's already here, and that we're already in the middle of it. And this, I believe, is what they call in the Bible the tribulations. What do you think?
Yeah, very fascinating. Very fascinating.
JP?
Hello, Beth.
Hello, JP. I have a question about the Pepsi disclosure, part of the normalization of all this truth movement and extraterrestrials, etc., with respect to their 6-minute-long commercial that they've just released called Black Knight Decoded. Have you seen it?
Holy hell. Absolutely. Yes, I was talking about this to my girlfriend last night. And all my friends said, have you seen this Pepsi thing? Right, number one, there's another little nugget here, right? Okay, so I just want to, before we get into that, let's just note a few things. Last Friday, I was running Strange Universe, and there was stuff coming in. There was this, you know, the Paris thing that just started, kicked off, and very early on, I got a link to a Wikipedia page, which was talking about it as if it had already happened, and that it had 140 casualties.
Oh, right.
And that was at like 12 midnight in GMT. That was like, you know, an hour after it had happened. Excuse me. Number two, there was a facility that was available on Facebook that I've never seen before. I have a friend in Paris on my Facebook. I have friends all over the world, but I have an old friend in Paris. And I got a notification that my friend Gertsch was marked safe. And I thought to myself, really? That quickly they managed to make an app that could do that? You're kidding. I know how long it takes to write software, and it don't take 5 minutes. So the Marked Safe app, the Wikipedia entry, and then the last nail in the coffin of this has been pre-planned is the whole Skype and Facebook with the blue, white, red stripe thing. Now, the reason I say blue, white, red stripe instead of the French flag thing, because I'm going to go further, because this ties us directly in with what you just said, Beth.
Right.
Because the Pepsi logo is blue, white, red stripe, is it not?
Yes.
So, I don't know what it means exactly, but from my interviews, when I speak to Simon Parks and I've spoken to Stuart Swerdlow about the use of color, is the use of if you have a police car in America, they have red and blue flashing lights that alternate. These are designed to confuse you, apparently, and you can't think straight if this light is flashing. So let's see, if you can't think straight and you're being forced to look at red and, you know, to look at these colors, does the white represent a great void between the two hemispheres of your mind that cannot connect to each other? Is that what it's trying to do? Is it trying to force a wedge between our hemispheres so that we don't actually know what's going on? That's the questions that are going through my brain. Anyway, so the Pepsi Black Knight thing. Now, the Black Knight is something Tracy Kennedy and I have been researching for several years. It's been around for 13,000 years, apparently. It avoids detection. It has an orbit which is vertical to the planet, as opposed to horizontal, like all other satellites. No other satellite can actually cross the poles, but this thing does. It weighs 15 tons. It's a big lump. It sends out a signal. It sends out radio signals, and that is what the premise of this. Do you want to talk about the thing, just to, you know, to describe it for the people who have not seen it?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, sure. They introduce it as a Tesla discovery in the commercial.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, tell people about, you know, introduce people to it, and, you know, describe it for them.
Do you describe what exactly the commercial?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people are, you're putting me on the spot. I'm a little too nervous to do that, I think.
Oh, bless your heart. Okay, so let's just, Kurt, sorry, you're going to come in with that?
I'll take a short crack at it. Just one thing, it's just absolutely surreal to see the subtlety, and you've just identified it. Trying to connect, a mysterious ET satellite to a product.
Oh, yes. Just, they're saying that they introduced themselves to us thousands of years ago and that they will be returning.
Yeah. No, right? We have to send a signal collectively as a race or as Earthlings. And if it's powerful enough, they will more or less come and save us, is the message that I got from it. And of course, the people that are contacting them are upper class. They can afford to go to the top of a very expensive high-rise building. And so that's basically it. You know, there's, and everything's wonderful. And
world unity, people all over the globe collecting, gathering, sending out signals that can be seen from space by way of balloons or placards arranged in symbols of peace, etc., universal symbols, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, it, to me anyway, I mean, it just feels yet again like we've been warned of before, the potential for a false flag, alien invasion of supposedly friendly brothers and sisters.
Yeah, this could be the setup.
It does feel certainly let's all wave out there and then they'll come. And so they're all waiting, you know, the Fourth Reich TR-3 systems. So, you know, we know that the final card is the alien invasion. We've heard Carol Rosen with her beautiful hair. We've heard Carol Rosen talk about Wernher von Braun saying, and the last card, the alien invasion. Don't come. So Three Crows saying, it's a false flag, they're coming, don't get on the ship. Yeah, absolutely. This is the New World Order's, clincher. They think that this is the one that will kind of get everybody and, you know, get everybody in on them. And to ask for their support and ask for their saviorship to happen. So yeah, it's playing on the external savior. It's playing on the truth that there is a weird satellite up there. They bring in Tesla. They've got the guy running what's that film? Enemy of the State, you know. They've got the SWAT team coming in the house, you know, and the back windows swinging, you know, the curtains swinging away. Oh, they've left.
It's curious because Tesla was vilified and basically shunned, burnt out of his lab, died penniless, and here he's being, you know, propped up as the genius he actually was. So it's interesting that in reality, he's ripped to shreds, character assassinated, because he wanted to do good for the world and share knowledge so long as capitalism couldn't profit from it. And then he's made to be like part of this solution, you know, in a way. It's just, I think his name's being abused yet again in this commercial. And it's 6 minutes long. Is this just intended to go viral on the net? Where would a commercial that long play? Perhaps in a movie theater prior to a film?
Probably,
certainly not on television. So their intent is to disseminate the information by way of people sharing the, you know, a link.
I would imagine that this is meant for theaters. And here's the thing. The other thing that I noticed about this movie, and I didn't measure the frequency of it, but right at the end, well, not the end, right in the middle, because the movie, you know, it's a 12-minute video. There is 6 minutes of action, and then there's another 6 minutes of just this with all these credits, all the, you know, thousands of people that are involved in this six-minute production. And I'm thinking, I bet there's some encoding on that. Also, that audio.
Oh, probably.
You know.
And talking to actors too, and Usher lending his voice and music to it. Does that not smack of Illuminati?
Well, this is the Luciferian agenda. It's very pretty. It's all these lovely people all waving flags at the same time. That's, you know, that's Luciferic. It really is. You know, it's not that it's evil per se, because Lucifer is the light bringer, is light, but it's light with the dark side. It's denied darkness. You know, it's like La La Land, where people are having a lovely, lovely time, and yet on the other side of the world, people are suffering. You know, you can't have all that goodness with, you know, and you know, it can't be a true reality if there's poor among you, basically. You know, if there are poor people in the world, then it's not a true what's the word? Philosophy. It has to be, you know, it has to be egalitarian for everybody. Yeah. Meanwhile,
it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt. It's interesting too. The you know, how emotions are manipulated in portions of it where the music swells and it's very hopeful, you know, and you have the feeling, I mean, we know better, but you get this feeling, wow, they're really trying to manipulate a feeling of hope and that this is good in the viewer.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, it's coming back to the old hope and change, all these kind of... And did you know that Yes We Can was, you know, Hitler also used that?
Mm.
You know? Wow. In fact, there are many, many parallels between Hitler's government structure and Obama's. Basically, there's a kind of homosexual mafia that is running the show. It's very strange. It's all to do with blackmail and stuff. But basically... There are these characters. They've been in politics the last few years, and they've been like the gay lover of the prime minister. This is the guy called, what was his name, Mendelssohn in Britain, you got Rahm Emanuel in the States, and Hitler had his boyfriend as well, and they were in the cabinet, but they were just like their lover. Yeah, we're in the cabinet. Yeah. So that's been going on.
If we bring this back to the world stage for a moment, politically speaking, and the Paris attacks, don't you find it interesting that Putin is taking a very strong role in the world stage with respect to kicking ISIS's ass, and which is much to the chagrin of the Americans? And isn't it very interesting that the Paris attacks, part of the arms used were AK-47s, but they didn't call them those. They called them Kalashnikovs. When's the last time anybody referred to an AK-47, which is part of the, you know, the zeitgeist and the, you know, current terminology? Everyone knows what an AK-47 is, but I think to, you know, besmirch Putin, they're calling the arm of choice for those attacks Kalashnikovs. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Well, yeah, a bit of product placement as well. You know, no such thing as bad advertising, you know. There are psycho people in the world who think, oh, yeah, I'll use the weapon of choice. Yeah. So, but, you know, but seriously, that's a very good point, that they're trying to make the Russians out to be bad people. And every time they do that, Putin comes in and does something really cool and really smart and very mature. This is the one thing that you could say is the big difference. Now, Obama might be over 6 feet tall and tower over everybody, but he's not mature. You know, he takes things too lightly in some places, and he's a little too casual. When you see him, he's not like a statesman. Whereas Putin is like taken seriously by all these generals.
Well, one seems ineffectual, where the other one actually seems to get stuff done.
Oh crap! Yeah, nobody says, "Oh no, sir," to Putin. You know, you wouldn't imagine. Well, probably they wouldn't do that to Obama either, but they'd probably go in the background.
You can practically see the marionette strings on Obama, though.
Mm. Oh, yeah, and the lines on the table, and the crack pipe in the back room. the man who's played more golf than Tiger Woods. I'm not kidding. you know, during the most turmoil in the world, he's playing golf, you know. So meanwhile, we've got Black Knight with the Pepsi, Aldebaranians. So, yeah, so the Aldebaran Empire is essentially this thing that we're looking at. And the Aryan race, that's the Aldebarans. They're the ones who the Nazis were looking for. They were looking for the people who had been, kind of created Germany. Apparently, that Germany was a sort of like little nursery for humans that the Aldebaranians liked. And that's why they kind of chose them. Anyway, so they managed to give them the idea. And in the reading of Diglock, you'll hear the conversation between the leader of the Glock project, and his name was Rudolf Seeger. At the beginning, because I didn't know how to pronounce German, and I read Seeger. And I mispronounced all the names, and then I played it back to my girlfriend, who is German, and she said, "No, you don't pronounce it this way, you know." So subsequent to the second hour and beyond, the names are pronounced properly. But so there's Rudolf Seeger, who goes, and he goes to the house of the Vrildarmen in Berlin, and it's not Maria Orsic, it's a few years later, but there's this other woman, the Madame, and she's there, and she's channeling, and this voice comes out of her, this big deep voice, of this Aldebaranian, purportedly, and he was talking to Seeger about the propulsion system of the thing, and he said, "How is the propulsion system?" And at the time, they had two or three counter-rotating electromagnetically activated plates, and they spin them around, but it just wasn't enough. It wasn't creating any thrust. And he says, "Ah, but you need to use Vril, this will make it work for you." And he says, "Well, what's Vril?" He said, "Well, Vril is different on every planet, but it's an electromagnetic ferrofluid." And that was all he heard. Yes, and at the end, as the channel was sort of drifting away, I think he said red mercury. So Seeger comes back to the Bell project, which is like down it's in Poland now, but it was away from Berlin. Comes back, and they start working on this project, and they discover that the classic German crazy Nazi scientist Werner Eckert, who is, you know, just is the archetypal crazy Nazi scientist, because he's been working with mercury, he's mad as a hatter, right? So he's been boiling mercury with thorium and iron filings to make a magnetic fluid. Okay, so he's been working on this stuff, and Martin Bormann is bringing the whole thing together, and says, "Yeah, okay, well, you've been working on this material. What do you call it?" We call it the Serum 525. Right, okay, and basically he discovered that this is the stuff that they're looking for, is this mad Serum 525, and he says, "Okay, well, how much have you got?" I said, "Oh, we have made about 6 grams of it so far." I says, "Right, okay, well, we're going to need 2 tons for each vehicle." So basically, what they then create is a pair of cylinders that are built to counter-rotate with each other. Now, I'm not sure exactly if they if one is inside the other or one is above the other. I think it's one above the other. And these things are filled with Vril, which is electrified and therefore becomes an electromagnet. And these electromagnets are forced against each other. And so you have counter-rotating energies of a very high speed, very high degree. And that's exactly what CERN is. Okay? So, yeah, now you're seeing the picture now. So this is the experiment. And there's a thing called the Stonehenge in Germany. Have you seen this thing?
I'm not aware of that in Germany.
All right. Or the Henge, I think. You know,
I know what that is, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, this is where they built the Vril. They built the Deglocker, and they chained the thing to this Henge. Because basically, once they started the rotation of the thing, it would suddenly lift off the ground. You know, a low speed. It would just lift off the ground and hover there. And when it was turned up further, it would rise up further along the ground, and it would start emitting a green mist. You would turn it up further, it would disappear. It would become invisible. It'd phase out of reality. And when you moved it, it would move from place to place like that. You know, it would instantaneously move. There would be no travel. And when you turned up even further, blue sparks, green flashes, and it disappears. Now, during the previous thing, it has formed a vortex, and this vortex can be used for interplanetary travel, so they say. And that's what the idea of it was, because it was a means of people from Aldebaran returning to Aldebaran. And according to most of the records, they never found any of the Vril Society, because the last thing that was left was a message from Maria Orsic saying, there are none of us left here. No one is left here. I think it's a direct translation, but like basically we've all gone. And that they went to Aldebaran, never to be seen again. Except a few years later, when, I believe, she appears to Billy Meyer.
Wow.
You see? And that this beautiful blonde Plejaran, who could speak perfect Austrian, appears to Billy Meyer in a tin ship, saying she's a Pleiadian. I think she was driving around in a Hanibu. So, while we're on the subject, it's time for a break. It's amazing. Let's just whack through here. So I'm going to play Enya's version of, or Enya's song, Aldebaran. And welcome back. God, that is not a very short song. I was just out of the bathroom. Anyway, I just went to get my copy of Diglock as well, just in case I need to refer to it. So, meanwhile, here we are, looking at the parallels between the Nazi International, the Nazi Germany, the New World Order, false flag attacks. Let's have a quick look at false flag attacks. It's known now in history that the burning of the Reichstag, which was essentially Germany's 9/11, was an orchestrated Nazi false flag attack. So that's part of their MO, as it were, their modus operandi, is they do things that are blamed on other people. Yeah, sneaky bastards. And so we have we see the emergence of this. I mean, and really, to me, the Bushes and the Clintons, but mainly the Bushes, they're just a continuation. This is what you're seeing. You know, this is the Nazis. And if you look at George Bush, and you just put him in a little high collar uniform, you know, and a pair of maybe a monocle or something, a little scar across his cheekbone, you know, he could easily look like one of those Nazi leaders, couldn't he?
Oh yeah.
Now there's another account, which again, this is just an account of somebody. And he said he was now whose bodyguard was he? Oh God, can't remember. I think he was like Hitler's bodyguard or something like that. But he was talking about George Bush is actually, or George Bush H.W. Bush, the old guy. He was the son of a man named Scherf, and that you know, they were, you know, essentially Paperclip. You know Project Paperclip?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Project Paperclip, I believe, was a lot bigger than just getting Wernher von Braun. It pulled over hundreds of thousands of Nazi scientists. And put them straight into the corporate military-industrial complex, which is why Eisenhower was so freaked out about it when he discovered it. And by then it was too late. It was, you know, everything was already set in plan, and it was almost as if it had been planned from the word go that the Nazis would feign losing the war and infiltrate something bigger. So we might need to look at the way we think the cabal are being defeated, just to make sure that they're not kind of squeezing their way out into a new transformation of something that is still the same, but is a new incarnation of it. It's got to be rooted out.
It's also it's quite fascinating the angle that Antarctica plays with the Nazis in regards to Admiral Byrd, and as I understand it, you know, the kind of infiltration of the American government and more or less takeover for their infrastructure.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, Operation High Jump, where Admiral Byrd brought the best American hardware to Antarctica, and they got their asses handed to them, I think is the phrase. You know, basically the Nazis had what we call flying saucer craft, and that they had essentially a death ray on it. What can you know? The thing that it can slice another ship into. You know, they in the 1940s. They had this stuff. Imagine what they've got now.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. So, one of the things, this is a report that came from another guest long time ago, who actually lived in Pahrump, Nevada, where Dave lived, and came into the studio to do this interview. He claimed to be a man from the Hollow Earth, and that he'd lived in Area 51 for 11 years on one of the lower levels, you know, towards the alien level of things. And he was there as a liaison to the Hollow Earth. And what he said was that in the 1940s, the Nazis, yes, they went to Antarctica and they were searching for the entrance to the Hollow Earth. And the people in the Hollow Earth came out to meet them and said, "You ain't coming in until you learn to live as one." And so the Germans set up Rainbow City in Neuschwabenland, which, you know, Neuschwabenland is actually like a green area. It's not covered in ice. It's, you know, quite a sort of Bavarian type mountainous area. I believe that New Berlin is there. You know, they're all living their lives in Antarctica, and they've got tunnels that come through to South Africa and Argentina, and they probably go all the way through America and come up straight underneath the White House.
Cool. Wow.
How many people are we talking about?
Well, we know that according to Benjamin Fulford, there are a million Satanists in America, right? And if we can say that they're the same people, then, you know, there's probably about a million of them. You know, these are hardcores. And, you know, I haven't even gone into what makes a person a Nazi. Where does it come from? You know, why did these people suddenly become completely heartless? What happens?
Are they mind controlled?
What do you think? What's your feeling on this?
Well, I know just from learning about the Archons, that it must be some kind of a infiltration into the soul from a higher negative consciousness or vibration. It's my guess. What do you think?
Well, there's this group, there's another occult group, and they're called the Brotherhood of the Black Stone. And that's also known as the Schwarze Stein, the Black Stone, and otherwise known as the SS.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, do you remember the X-Files?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember there was this black oily substance?
Black goo, yeah.
Black goo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, and this is an area that I haven't gotten the whole story on. But somewhere, there is a mountain that they visit, and somewhere there is a source of some kind of evil black goo that infects the Brotherhood of the Black Stone. They do something with the Black Stone. Yeah. Now, we also know... okay. So the black goo maybe is condensed into a black stone, isn't it?
They say it's extracted from stone, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that it's intelligent and, well, in this case, malevolent. But it may be that it's just programmable and that it goes with the intent of the person who discovers it.
Well, they say that's what the Falklands War was actually fought over, correct?
Apparently, yeah. That there was a supply of it down there, and they were abusing it. They came back, tried to abuse it some more, and then they threw it down the toilet. What a great, yeah, what a good idea that was. So.
Yes, I listened to Harold Coutsvella talk about that, but it scares me a lot.
Yeah, well, you have to understand that, you know, there is always a balancing factor. So if somebody tells you about something that's really scary, you'll find out something in a day or so that will be really quite comforting. You know, and just remember that there'll always be a balancing factor, and you know, you don't have to worry about stuff anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and by golly, you're not dead yet. Are you? So, you know, thing is, right, I had a bike crash 30 years ago, and so I've been through all that. I'm done with that, worrying about whether I'm going to die or not. The thing that I'm worried about is, like, long-term torture. You know? that's my kind of worry, you know. 30,000 years of having your liver pecked up. Yeah, that sort of torture. Anyway. Where were we?
Go ahead. I did have a question back to the Fourth Reich that I also read, and I don't know if it's correct, and I always like to say that because, you know, you have to, I always try to double check everything to try to verify best you can, but that, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, we had a little sound here. Towards the end of World War II, did the Nazis have quite a few developed flying saucers?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. They started moving out. All right. So from what I understand, Adolf Hitler and I think it might be Bormann. It's certainly, you know, one of his higher ups. They both had plastic surgery and went through the Vatican to be ordained as priests, and then were transported by submarine to Antarctica. To Argentina, where he lived out the rest of his life as Father Crespi.
Wow. Wow.
And there's a story that kind of hooks this together. And this is a story from Wendell Stevens. He connected with the daughter of a dentist who did the work on Hitler's teeth to make them look different, to disidentify him. And to various plastic surgeries that happened to him, to turn him into Father Crespi. And then the Nazis shot him and his brother, and her brother, but she survived. And she had at some point actually been in Hitler's office. And there was a painting on the back of the office that he had, and he loved this art, piece of art. And it turns out that this same piece of art was found in Father Crespi's office in Argentina. And after he died in the 1980s, a big crew came from the Vatican and collected all the art and took it back to Rome.
Wow.
And the person who apparently was Hitler was one of the doubles, as we see a lot, you know. And there was doubles of Kamala, and there was doubles of Bormann, and there was doubles of Hitler, you know, they all had doubles. And Mountbatten, there was a double.
So, JP, are you saying that the double was a look-alike, or in another body that could be occupied with a soul switch?
Oh, no, they're look-alikes. Secret Services know how to do all the plastic surgery to make somebody look like somebody else pretty well. And that there are several Putins, for instance.
That's right.
You'll see that there's a Putin that's got a mole just in the ear that another Putin hasn't got. And they're slightly different Putins, but they're pretty, pretty Putin-y. And when he got onto the thing. Now, I think, you know, Sean David Morton and I, we have this thing, the Obamas are so fake that there's actually two Barack Obamas, and one of them is gay, and the other one is straight, and he's the one who's sent abroad, and he's the one that goes around flirting with all the females. All the, you know, that Danish Prime Minister. You remember he did the selfie with the Danish Prime Minister? You know? So, you know, it's crazy. You know, it's just like, it's just a game to them. It's just an idiot thing.
Yeah, and also just the, you know, this thing, I don't know if it was Republicans attacking Obama, you know, here in Canada, we were reading about it, but, you know, Michelle is a man.
Oh,
his wife's a man, right?
Oh yeah. Well, actually, been doing a bit of research into that. He called her Michael.
What?
His name is Michael LaVaughn Robinson, and he was a linebacker. I mean, he really was. Because you see, I look at Michelle Obama and I think those shoulders are not female. That is the shoulders of a linebacker. You know, the neck, the big, thick, cable-like neck, Cardassian. if you know Star Trek, the Cardassians had this kind of cable of a neck. No disrespect, but that's a dude. I mean, to me, that's a dude. The size of the hands, the head size. There's all these forensic things that apparently men and women are very different. You know, we don't know. We've not seen the children growing up. We've not seen Michelle pregnant. We've not seen photos of Barry and Michelle, you know, having little babies and things like that. It's all fake, to my nose. It's all fake.
Wow. I had another question. I know for myself, I've read so many things over the years that. I would be horrible to, you know, to host any kind of a show because I get my facts all mixed up. So I apologize ahead of time, but I was fascinated with something I heard recently about the fact that when the Germans went to the moon, that there's some site there where it was, apparently the Germans and Draco reptilians had some kind of a battle, and there's dead bodies everywhere in a burnt out facility or building. Have you heard anything about that and what that might be about?
Wow, I'd love to see some of that. No, I haven't. What I know about the moon is that on the dark side of the moon, there is a building that is shaped like a swastika. So I hear.
Wow.
So I hear. That's what, you know, we don't see the dark side of the moon. It's the far side of the moon. There is no dark side of the moon, right? Because it's illuminated once a month, but we don't see the far side of the moon. We only see the near side of the moon. You see? So there's no dark side of the moon, but we see only one side of it. And so you don't know what's on the other side. You know, it could be that little sort of dish dome thing like they have in the Death Star, you know. Yeah. I definitely have the feeling that the moon is like a big ship. It's like a big kind of very, very old sort of, you know, it's dusty, old dusty ship that has been parked there for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, millions of years.
I know that Randy Kramer brought up the fact that the moon was like a zone where there were a lot of agreements between varying ET and humanoid races of, it's like Switzerland there, apparently. Do you know anything about that, JP?
Switzerland, did you say?
Yeah, just there's agreements to not have any conflict there, of course, although there's conflict historically between ET groups and so on the moon, from what I understand.
And that's where he landed first before he flew to Mars, a 15-minute trip from the moon to Mars. But he said that he traveled through a portal from Earth to the moon first, where he would board a ship and then go to Mars.
Well, that's more or less alternative three, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you build a base on the moon as a staging post to go to Mars. So you teleport to the moon and get a ship to Mars.
That's what Mr. Kramer says.
Yeah.
I've had a guest on my show called William Stillings, who was also involved in Project Pegasus as a young boy in the 1960s. And he described over and over again with enormous consistency the process of going through the jump room. He said that the first of all it's an elevator, and it goes up one floor, and it goes up really, really, really slowly, and so nobody ever takes it. But when you turn the key the other way, it becomes this jump room, and first of all, it pressurizes. There's a load of compressed air blown into the room. You're supposed to take a bottle of water because you get dehydrated during this process. And so they put a whole load of pressure in it, and the walls and the floors join up as it goes through the teleport. And so, you know, there is a smooth line between the you know, there's no boundary between the walls and the floor and the ceiling. when it's traveling, and you just kind of hang there for 10-15 minutes. He says it's a very calibrating experience, which is basically, you know, you leave parts of your negativity behind. It's a very interesting concept, you know, that when you teleport, like, part of you doesn't get teleported, which is actually the not so pleasant parts of you. So it's quite handy. So it's a kind of instant. Maybe we should all be teleported, and everybody won't have any sort of desire to war anymore.
So it sounds purifying.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's pictures of Michelle pregnant.
You found some?
Yeah, Three Crow found some. There she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting with NASA lately how, you know, they're talking about, you know, they found evidence of water on Mars, and now there's an ice cloud, I believe, in Saturn that they've discovered. So they're, you know, bringing up the water card here for life potential.
Oh, well, I reckon there's water everywhere. I think this is, you know, the whole NASA thing about, water's so scarce on all the planets. There's a planet called Europa, isn't there?
Yeah.
That has an ice shield, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's like,
supposed to be like an ice planet, isn't it? That planet is apparently about the size of the Earth. And it's got an ice shield with something on it. I believe the Earth used to be like that, and that's what we used to call the firmament.
Ooh.
Just a thought. I've got loads of crazy ideas. You know, don't listen to me. I'm completely mad about all this stuff. But I got, you know, everybody, oh, that's the same as this thing that occurs at another place in history, you know. So there's an ice shield that forms around the Earth that allows, do you know anything about the firmament? I mean, it's a thing that is mentioned in the Bible and ancient books, and I think it's created by pyramids. I'll go into the thing, but what have you heard about these things?
I don't know a whole lot about them, so I'm all ears here, JP.
As am I. I've heard nothing.
Yep. This is great.
So, here's my bizarre theory number 37, right? And it's quite complex. It's multi-layered. So we start off with the first layer, is that a pyramid, okay? So one of the things that people know about pyramids is that if you put fruit in them, they will dehydrate. Do you know that?
No. I didn't know that, no.
No.
Yeah? That you could mummify a body by putting it in a pyramid, couldn't you?
Uh-huh.
What's mummification is to dehydrate it.
Mm.
Okay, so dehydration is a factor of something that pyramids do. Okay, so let's put that as data point number one. We also know that many pyramids that have been found throughout the world, and the world is covered with pyramids, that many of the pyramids we found in the world have tunnels that connect with a water table. Okay, so let's put that as data point number two. Okay, so there, pyramids dehydrate things. Pyramids also have water supplies. There is a mechanical pump mechanism that is a reflection of the design of the Great Pyramid. So you could say that the pyramid used to be sort of semi-submerged into the Nile, and there was a pump that brought that water into the King's Chamber, where there was a plasma ark. Okay, so my other theory about the pyramid is that the Ark of the Covenant is the thing that fits inside what they call the sarcophagus, and that it's a plasma ark generator, which is the fire in the middle, the pyramid, that then turns everything in that space, turns all the water into plasma, and that the plasma is then transmitted through the top of the pyramid out up into the atmosphere. Now, it used to be, it was said about the pyramid in ancient times that it could create weather and that it could create clouds. So if you've got something that can create what I get from this is that the pyramid pumped water into the chamber where there was a plasma. The plasma turned the water into plasma, which was projected out of the top of the pyramid. Steering coils were installed around the pyramid, which could move it and direct the beam of plasma. But I believe that originally it went straight up, and when it hit the boundary between the atmosphere and space, it would create a layer of crystals that stayed up there, of ice, and that these ice crystals eventually formed like a growing plate. You know, if you drip water into a bowl in a freezer, it will eventually form a kind of curved surface, and that this plate would then join up with the other plates that are created by all the other pyramids on the planet, and finally create an ice shield of probably quite a thickness eventually. But that's my theory on the firmament and potentially where all the water came from. Oh. So, weird theory number 38. The pyramids are here to create the ice shield that used to be called the firmament. Any thoughts?
Works for me.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
What do we need the ice shield for?
Because it keeps the earth... Well, it's a greenhouse.
I see.
Yeah, it keeps everything nice and calm. It's self-healing, because if the pyramids are running, then, you know, it will continually be putting ice up there.
Oh, okay.
And I believe also transparent, you know, so that the sunlight would come through. And of course, sunlight is not hot. Did you know that?
Is it the atmosphere mixing with the sunlight that creates the heat?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So, why aren't the pyramids operational?
Now, one of the things that Alex Collier said was that the reason that Atlantis was destroyed is that one of their pyramids was, they tried to keep it going when the polarity of the Earth shifted 13,000 years ago. So I believe that the polarity of the Earth is shifting once again.
Oh.
And that the pyramids will turn on, or are turning on. Haven't we seen pictures of these things, spirally like things coming out the tops of pyramids these days?
Or solid columns of light.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah. So, I believe that there's going to be a pole shift. Now, I'm not talking about geographic pole location. How about electrical pole? How about electrical ground? Instead of being negative, could go to positive.
Oh.
Now, when you think about it, and somebody says, "I'm wanting to speak on a positive ground," I'm going to be speaking from a positive ground. That sounds different if you're saying I'm speaking from a negative ground. And I don't know if you remember in the 60s, there were cars that had positive ground. And it was impossible to fit a modern car radio into them because they had positive ground. They couldn't fit. You had to insulate. Anyway, weird stuff. So one of the ancient prophecies... hang on. Yes, pyramid codes proves this. Interesting. Okay, yeah. And Three Crow, I wonder if you might add something on this, is that one of the ancient prophecies is that the technology that white man has, let's say, will one day turn around and bite them. If you can confirm that. I know. I think you've got some information on that. But basically, this is the operation of, you know, if things go positive ground, say you had an air conditioning system that suddenly flips poles, it means that it becomes live, you know. So your house becomes live. That's not going to be fun.
They should have went with the Tesla energy,
yes,
instead of Edison's abomination.
Well, one of the problems is that in America, you use the ground to carry the electricity. In Britain, we use the three-phase. I think we still use the ground, but you can work off the three-phase. You don't need the ground. But so that, you know, you've got a single electrical wire that is travels across the country. And that's asking for trouble. That's a really, really bad way of doing it. But anyway, too late now. The whole infrastructure is based on it.
You're inferring there'd be power surges.
Power surges, you know. We're also going to be, you know, we're also effectively, you know, a power line, a long power line of several hundred kilometers is a low frequency aerial. And these are the kind of frequencies that you get from the sun. That would induce this, you know, enormous high value, low frequency into the wire, which will then go as it goes positive and as it goes negative, burning everything out as it goes. So that's another thing to not worry about. Here's the thing, all right? We need to obviate these problems. The problem of positive ground is we need to generate our own power from our own villages or our house. I'd love to see a Maghreb working. I haven't seen one yet by somebody I know. You know, I'm waiting for somebody I know, who I've spoken to before, who I trust, not to be, you know, mind controlled by the Blackstone, to demonstrate in front of me or over Skype. I'm very happy. Demonstrate this thing and, you know, put your hand there. Stick your screwdriver here. You know, I'd like to be able to fiddle about with something like that. That would be fantastic.
Well, they're saying it takes about 6 weeks for the nanotechnology to fully realize itself after the connection of the device.
Right. So it's got to build up its resonance.
Right. And then it works as a free unit. But until then, it does need to harness the electricity available already in the infrastructure of the home where it's placed until it's self-sustaining and works through the plasma, whatever. That's out of my wheelhouse, but I'm watching it closely too. As well as you're touching on the electrical grid and whatnot. What about all the solar flares that are reaching huge, huge levels on the scales?
That's what I'm talking about, actually. That's what I was talking about, is about, like, the frequencies from the solar flares create a frequency, you know,
right,
like gamma waves and all sorts of low frequencies as well as high frequencies.
Which affect the magnetic grid, the electromagnetic grid?
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't take much to induce a magnetic field into the grid, producing a large spike of electricity that will just, you know, burn its way through whatever's there, because it's like 100 million times more than it was built for. Yeah, sort of thing.
So I'm wondering, in relation to that, there have been some advice given about, oncoming ice age, and also... I guess that might be more long term, but in the short term, being prepared for, having your earthquake kit together and having supplies, and also information about, communities being organized as well. I wonder if that's all related to what you're talking about.
We are going to need, all of us, the human race, planet Earth, we are going to need to change the way we are, because the things that we rely on are not going to be there anymore. So we need to kind of prepare for that. So number one, I'd say, you know, if you're addicted to coffee, learn to drink other things as well, just in case. If you're addicted to anything, you know, learn maybe not to be so addictive, because the supply might run out. You know, say there was an electrical fault. Okay, say there was a solar flare. Let's just have a really doomy worst case scenario, because I was Millennium Man. I was interviewed on TV for this kind of stuff. But is that airplane mine? Yeah, they're really flying around, these jets tonight. Wow, that's a Eurofighter. That is anyhow. That frequency really put me off. Where was I going with that?
Yeah, so you were talking about the
worst-case scenario.
The worst-case scenario. Okay, so imagine, right? So we've got a great big solar filament, and it goes, and it whips our way, and it just flicks this huge CME, coronal mass ejection, of matter and plasma and goodies and all that sort of stuff. And it just happens to be, you know, magnetically oriented, that it doesn't get but deflected off the Earth's magnetic sphere, and it hits the middle of America, you know, where this aforementioned power line stroke radio receiver aerial, energetic receiver aerial, is strung out across your country, which just happens to be the appropriate frequency for it to induce a vast number of billions of volts into the thing, and you know, so your power lines go, you know, and all the substations go, and the substations are really difficult to replace. These transformers are not built for it. They've not got the surge protection that can handle this thing. I remember, you know, doing a lot of research about this many years ago, because it was a Millennium Bug thing, and they've probably stepped up production of these, of the transformers, but they've been very worried about this. So anyway, let's say we lose power, we lose electricity. What do you do in your house? How are you prepared, guys?
Well, we have a pretty robust first aid kit. We have about 25 gallons of water. We have a cool little thing called a bio stove. And, you know, we have a little bit of gas.
Food for about 3 months?
Yeah, we have food for about 3 months. Lots of canned food.
Hand-powered radios?
Yeah, hand-powered radios. That kind of covers it, more or less.
Okay.
And a cat.
And a what?
A cat.
A cat. Yeah, cats are very important, because they can keep the... You know, no kidding. They keep the vermin down, you know, because they're interested in the grain and things. So, here's the thing. And here's an insight that I had in the last couple of years. You know, there's all these people who are preparing, all right? But, you know, most people are not going to be prepared. What if we go through this wave, and when we come out the other side, we actually don't need to eat?
That
we can live on sunlight, or we just live, you know, we just exist, because we're charged up like batteries, you know, by this enormous CME. Perhaps the CME is there to charge the Earth, and the Earth charges herself and charges us, and we light up like batteries, like torches, and we don't need to eat anymore, and we emanate radiation, beneficial radiation. We're like little stars that warm other people in with our presence. Wouldn't that be a good thing to take around the galaxy?
Sounds good.
Oh, you're so great. Yeah,
because you know, I was thinking, what this, you know, lots of people are, you know, saving food and stuff like that, but I don't seem to be able to save food. But what I have been doing is like not eating so much food, and learning to live on less and less food. And I've been doing some days where I just eat boiled rice with a little bit of sesame oil and a little bit of soy sauce. And the pounds are falling off me. It's wonderful. So, you know, I started out, you know, a few years ago, I was very, you know, sort of Homer Simpson size. I'm now kind of average dad bod, you know. It's like most people's dad or something like that.
Brown rice or white rice?
Just white rice, you know, just basmati is my favorite.
Well done.
So, yes, toilet paper, there's a thing.
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a really big one. Get toilet paper. And also, just in case the place floods, don't keep the toilet paper on the floor.
Yeah.
Or at least keep some up above. And don't keep it all in the attic, just in case the attic gets covered with snow, and the snow comes in, drifts in, then settles and makes everything wet again. So, yeah, now, electricity is... I've been doing a lot of research on solar panels in the last few years, and batteries and the technologies of them. I found that the old-fashioned nickel cadmium is very, very poisonous, not very much capacity, and nickel metal hydrides also relatively poisonous, not that much better. Lithium polymer, on the other hand, reliant on Afghanistan's lithium collection, incredibly efficient and very, very light. So you can create, you could almost make put them in, sew them into clothing. You know, you can get a, what is it, 3.5 amp hour, 5 volt battery, 3.5 volt battery, that can run some kinds of electronics like a smartphone or something like that. It's 3 millimeters thick. It's really, really thin stuff. You can, and as I said, you could sew it into clothing. It's that thin. So you could have even a suit that had like a little electric generator running, or an air conditioner, keep you cool, or something, keep you warm. You could use those in conjunction with the best kind of solar panels. We haven't got to the solar panel that I really want, which is the one that has just been put out on Facebook. I saw it last week or so, and it's, you know, I thought of this about 15 years ago. I was laying in my caravan thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have a window that could generate power as well, and then in fact that you could regulate the amount of light that was coming in by the amount of solar energy that it was stealing from the window. That it would, like, instead of the light coming through, it turned the light into electricity, and, you know, it would act as a sunshade, and the excess energy would generate power. And I think they've got something like that now. I think they've just created it. And I saw it on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. Electricity of overrated. Funny. But yeah, I mean, most of us are great fans of electricity these days. Do you have batteries and wind generators? What's your electricity policy?
Do you mean as a country or just for us as a...
Just for you guys.
Oh.
The Tyrells.
Yeah, we went and we bought bulk batteries at our Costco here, which is our, you know, the big superstore. That's basically it. We just have batteries for the radio or maybe flashlights, but that's about it. We do live in a very mild part of Canada. So the winters aren't really harsh here, but still, you know, it'd be horrific if it went down. It'd be pretty tough.
So, have you got anything in the way of, like, rechargeables and things like that? You got a caravan battery, you know, for and low voltage lighting.
No, we don't. We did look into buying a generator, but there was a problem with trying to vent it out, like having it inside. We live in a modular home, so no, we were thinking about trying to kind of vent it out. We have a little kitty door for our cat that we mentioned, and just vent it outside. But no, we don't really have anything covered for that. But you got me thinking.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's one of the things to consider. It's something I've been talking about a long time. It's one of my own house project is that I've got some solar panels, pathetic number of solar panels, really. But I want to find other ways of generating power into the system. So I've got a few solar panels all joined together and a couple of car batteries. And I'm wiring a 12 volt and 5 volt line around my house so that I can run appliances from these batteries.
Oh yeah.
Charging regulators and remote control switches and things like that. And you know, part of it is so that I can learn about microelectronics, which is like a kind of, it's been a long term wow, that plane.
Yeah, it's
Is that down your end? Which is a long term thought of mine is having a house that runs off batteries rather than the house that runs off mains, because DC does not have EMF fields.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you know, you don't get that kind of wire. You know, there's no mains hum. This is what I'd like to have. You know, when you plug an amplifier in and you know, you put your finger on it and it goes beep 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 beep. That's because mains EMF is generated into your body. And so that BBB is coming from your body. You know, that's what your body's singing when you're in a house with a ring main, like every modern house. It's sitting in your body. You're doing. And when you put your finger on an amplifier, it's just amplifying your body's induced frequencies.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ah, what's this, Craig? Britain's going to have a massive blackout soon via a terror attack. Am I having a war over there? No. Well, I do live near RAF Kinloss and RAF Lossiemouth, which are, you know, two major bases here. And when they have military exercises, which they have all the time, you know, every few months, we get lots of aeroplanes flying over my house, and they big, heavy, fat aeroplanes, you know, that and they're just, you know, wasting fuel, burning stuff. Anyway, so yeah, but I live in a stone house. It's been here for over 300 years, I think. So it's not going anywhere. Might need a new roof after something, but it's pretty. It's a stone house with a metal roof. It's not doing too badly.
Oh, yeah, it's good, solid.
Good and solid, indeed. Although, apparently, radon gas is produced by the granite that the walls are made of. But I don't mind. Bit of radiation. You know, there are people in Chernobyl who are thriving on the radiation. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah. You know, it's humans are incredibly, incredibly adaptable, and you know, this thing, like Nietzsche says, you know, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Well, I think they call themselves the radioactive couple or something. You can check it out, just the Chernobyl radioactive couple, and I saw them a few years ago, 2013. I think they were a couple, but they broke up. But they had to eat radioactive food to survive. They'd completely adapted.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So, JP, can I ask you, just in relation to the future, you're probably familiar with Cobra and, you know, the event. What's your feeling on, a change, a positive military stepping up and a non-violent change in the world?
Okay, all right. Look, let me just tell you what my feeling the event is. The event is the unveiling, the disclosure. The true disclosure is of your true nature.
Mm.
It is the nature that is continuous in its knowledge of itself. Like when you wake up in the morning, you just spend 8 hours where? You don't know, you don't remember. But when you're asleep and dreaming, you're spending 8 hours doing this thing, and you don't remember the day that you're in. You don't have what they call continuity of consciousness. So, this is caused apparently by the harmonics of the veil and the whole archonic grid and all this stuff. And that after the event, or the event is the unmasking of that.
Yes. Okay.
That's that. From what I can understand, my spirit guides have been talking about. It's not about knowing something outside of yourself. It's about understanding that, you know, you've known everything. You know everything always. And we've been separated from it, and we keep thinking we got to find God or something outside of ourselves. And it's like the furthest position between, you know, two points is between the head and the heart.
Yeah, it's also quite an incredible gift that the movie The Matrix gave everyone for, as far as insights into that as well, isn't it?
Have you seen Cloud Atlas?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
And Jupiter Ascending.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're all by the same guys.
Yeah.
And they're all telling three parts of the same sort of story. Like Cloud Atlas is all about reincarnation and soul groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jupiter Ascending is about Lush and the Anunnaki and the Greys and the Reptilians. That's brilliant. I mean, the way they portrayed the Greys and the Reptilians was just like, wow, yeah. And Matrix is the Archonic Grid. And the,
yeah.
You know. Also, did you know, that the Matrix and Terminator are really one story?
Ooh.
I can see the parallels.
Yeah, because it was written by a lady called Sophia Stewart, and who is a black female science fiction writer. You don't get many of them. And they, you know, it, the world being, you know, that movie world being sort of dominated by men and things. They basically ripped her off, and she's very pissed off about it. But because she explained it, you know, it's basically the Christ story, and the Terminator is the killing of the firstborn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Pontius Pilate says that? Herod, thing, and you know, there's parallels all the way through it, and that Neo is the same as the boy in the Terminator series.
Like
so, there's a little thing. Bees. Yes, bees. How are your bees this year? I've had some bad bee years in the last few years, but I have a feeling that they're coming back. What's going on with your wife?
We did pretty well with bees.
I think that we were okay, but I think in certain parts of the United States, they've really been badly affected.
They have to rent bees from beekeepers who bring them to the sites and let them go, and then they come back to their homes, and then the beekeepers move to another site. It's all by contract. It's pretty bleak.
All right. Apparently, the bees really don't like that.
And
a lot of them basically give up the ghost when that happens. I've heard people, like bee speakers, bee whisperers, saying, you know, that's why they're dying. You know, they're moving around too much, and they get completely exhausted. They make maps, you know, and they're cartographing all over the place, and you know, the database crashes because there's just too much information to collate with the Hive Mind database.
Why would it be getting better given the proliferance and ubiquity of cell phone towers, etc.?
Yeah, cell phone towers, Gwen towers, low frequency pulsing. This is, we recommend this black stone called shungite, and it does mitigate this stuff. It softens the edges of your electronic harsh buzzings, essentially. And
even for the bees?
We should try that.
We should. What about Organite and Tower Busters?
Tower Busters are great, and Organites are great. Yeah, Organite and shungite are, I wouldn't say they're similar in operation because they're completely different, but they have similar effects on their environment, is that they harmonize their environment, but through different ways of doing it. Organite is a kind of reprocessor. It takes energy in and spreads energy out, whereas shungite is just like a kind of sweeper. It's got millions of black holes that pull out all anything that's kind of out of order. Or, you know, so toxins that have got these funny radical... valences. They're... What they call them, free radicals. It kind of attracts them because they're looking for something. And the shungite offers a something for them to have. Even though it's oblivion. Yes, bees.
It's also interesting, JP, that here, the west coast of Canada, that there have been a lot of incidences of whales and killer whales washing up on shores, dying for mysterious reasons. And some people are speculating that the American Navy is up to something. Have you heard anything about that?
I have, but I've just realized the time has zipped by. It's five past. We're 5 minutes into the next program. So I really have to bring this one to a close. It's been such a buzz that I haven't even kept track of time. So there we go. Now we're going to take that in there. So thank you so much, Beth and Kurt Tyrell. It's been a really interesting conversation. I hope it's pulled some pieces and puzzle pieces together for everybody. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. That was great.
Beyond.